So you're saying that you want a fast-paced time travel thriller about pizza?
Yeah, okay, it's called 30 Minutes or Less. Now you need to get on board with this, okay?
Okay, I'm not on board.
Okay, here's the pitch.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're a pizza guy, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, you gotta deliver a pizza, but it's way far away, and it's also 200 years in the past. What do you do?
It's gotta be both of those things.
That's in the special instructions on the sheet. They're like, it's the house in the back, the gate sticks a little. It's 200 years in the past. That's it. That's what it says on
there. And then your main character does not know how to travel through time or anything, but has to figure it out over the course.
That's why it's a thriller.
Is it a comedy thriller, or is it like dead serious?
No, dead serious.
Oh my gosh, is there gore?
Well, there's a little. I mean, anytime you got to travel to 1816 to deliver a pizza, there's going to be a little gore.
how many tits?
One. One tit.
One tit. Okay, and does it pass the Bechdel?
Yes, the tit talks to another woman about something other than a man.
Wait, the tit is a woman?
Obviously.
We established that? It's just, is it like a CGI thing?
Just sort of no, all practical around. Effects here.
All practical effects. It's done in costuming.
Yeah, we get everything in post. Don't worry about it.
Okay, well, see, the only thing I'm having trouble with is I feel like we're old enough to where 30 minutes or less means something to us, but that's been dead since, like, the 80s.
Oh, yeah, but people will need to go back in time and figure out what the reference is.
Oh, okay, so the movie is like a 3D glasses movie, except it comes with a little time machine so you can go back to the 80s and establish that it used to be that pizza had to be delivered in 30 minutes or less or it was free or something.
Yeah, no, that was a gimmick that someone did once, and then it just stuck in our brains.
Well, it immediately became car accidents, and everyone was like, well, you can't do that. You are not allowed to incentivize drivers to drive crazy for $8 pizza.
No, that was one of those things that existed for like a month, but then just stayed in our collective ideas for what pizza was.
It's true. I mean, really, because the other thing about pizza is that pizza has always been a delivery food.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what's the deal with that? Why can't I fucking call Islands and be like, guys, burgers, my house, let's do this. Give me some of them tacos made of chicken, come on.
See, now what they need to do is they've got those trucks, the ice cream trucks that go around. What they should do is put pizza in there. And then you hear the little jingle, and you run out there, and a guy gives you a slice. And the reverse of that, ice cream shops should deliver.
Okay, ice cream shops should deliver, that's true. There are pizza trucks, that's just what food trucks are.
No, that's garbage.
They don't drive slowly up and down neighborhoods because they don't need to.
I know, what I'm saying is, I want an old man with a cart full of pizza and a little bell to just walk down and go, pizza, ding, 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 pizza.
Better points if he doesn't speak English at all and you have to kind of indicate pizza.
Yeah, you just point to a picture.
He's just got pictures of pizzas.
Yeah, just different pizzas.
I'll take that one that's shaped like the Pink Panther's head. I'll tell you that right now.
Give me that Tweety Bird pizza.
Welcome to Afterthought. I mean System Mastery.
Professionals.
Wizards. Ralph Bakshi's Wizards.
Didn't we do this? Isn't this a thing we did? Why are we back here?
Well, because apparently, at some point in the 90s, which amazes me, they decided to do a role-playing game based on Ralph Bakshi's Wizards.
This is horseshit. Let me tell you something. We have multiple times on this show gone, oh man, you know what was a rad property from, say, the 80s or 90s that should have had an RPG because it's set up to be like an RPG anyway? Oh, this or that or whatever. And then you know what gets it? You know what fucking gets an RPG? Wizards. Ralph goddamned Bakshi's Wizards.
Well, it's got to. It makes perfect sense that this would happen. I mean, I'm not saying it's a good thing. It's not a good idea. But it makes sense that it would happen. Because the title of the series, or the movie, is Wizards. And it's a movie about wizards. And everyone's got swords in it. And there's monsters. So yeah, of course it's going to get a role-playing game. And also, it came out at the right time. Like, you notice that nowadays, there isn't automatically a role-playing game assigned to a property where it'd make perfect sense for it to be. You know, there is no I, Frankenstein role-playing game.
Of course there is. It's called Promethean.
Yeah, but that's older. I mean, I'm not saying licensed games. I'm saying that that era has died. I think it died with Harry Potter. There's no Harry Potter RPG.
Well, no, because people actually give a fuck about the rights for their stuff now.
Yes, it used to be that role-playing games could buy the rights because no one knew what the shit they were selling them for. They were like, you wanted to make what? Huh? You want to make a thing? You want to make some Star Trek, whatever? Fine, here's the rights. Have fun. Get out of here.
No, see, what that turned into is nowadays, that's apps. Because people will give you the rights to make an app for fucking anything.
Oh my god, have you counted the amount of free, but with microtransaction, Marvel apps there are? Like, based on
Marvel?
Oh, there's
a million.
Yeah, it's everything. Every kind of game, and then usually more than one of every kind of game.
Yeah, even, like, lower, like, in the public eye companies, like, fucking Warhammer 40K has, like, 8 different apps.
I feel like they've tried to move away from making regular tabletop games and into apps, because they have so many.
Oh, yeah, it's insane, and I think that's what this generation's RPGs that have been licensed is apps.
All right, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, let's talk about Ralph Bakshi's Wizards. We watched this movie a while back, and since people don't necessarily listen to both of the shows that we do, we should probably sum up the concept of what Ralph Bakshi's Wizards, the movie, is before we dive into how they made a role-playing game out of it.
Okay.
Because we're experts on this now. We're known critics.
Yeah, known critiques of the world of movies.
That's right, yeah. We're cineasts, as it were.
We're the best at this. We know what we're talking about.
We're those two famous film critics. Oh, we're the Gilbert and Sullivan of film criticism. Yeah, Laurel and Hardy. Film criticism.
We are the Groucho and Harpo.
Yeah, the Oscar the Groucho and Harpo the Big Bird.
Oh, Harpo the Big Bird.
Come on, wouldn't you like to see Big Bird do a Harpo routine?
Yeah, I'd watch that.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Big Bird just sort of falling on guys and cutting their ties in half and stealing their bags of hot peanuts.
Okay, so in order to really visualize Ralph Bakshi's Wizards, I want you to get in your head a garbage scow. Now set it on fire and watch it for about 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this movie is.
Okay, now, all the stuff on the garbage scow should be old, like, History Channel, what if the Nazis had won footage? Because that's what the... Okay, I'll run through the plot of this movie real quick. 10 million years from now, after the great wars of technology decimated the Earth and magic came back, there's a bunch of elves and fairies living in one part of the world, and a bunch of horrible mutants and robots living in another part of the world. And then this one elf lady gives birth to two wizards, and one of them's a good guy and one of them's a bad guy, and they hate each other, and then one of them moves off and forms his own city with, like, evil robots and mutants and stuff.
And blackjack and hookers.
And blackjack and hookers.
Literal blackjack and hookers.
And both of those things, yeah. And then the other one, who's this dumpy little short gnome that sounds like George Carlin.
It's like a Jersey gnome with magic.
Yeah, oh, he's the worst. Anyway, the two of them have to battle, and... The evil one finds that he can control his mutants better if he shows them old Nazi propaganda, and so he does. And I'm not saying, like, you know, cartoon old Nazi propaganda. I mean, he starts a film reel in this cartoon film, and what they see is actual Nazi footage.
What you get is literal Hitler and a bunch of swastikas on things.
The funny thing, and I said this during the movie review as well, is that all he shows is Hitler yelling in German, and then a bunch of people kind of marching and airplanes going around. It doesn't, if you take those shots and you don't apply the context of the Holocaust or anything like that, it kind of looks like, wow, that guy looked like a good leader. And look at those troops. Aren't they marching efficiently? Like, that's all you get.
Yeah, no, this is 10 million years in the future, which means in order to demoralize the enemy and pump up his guys, he's like, here's a dude shouting in a language you don't know, also a plane. And you're like, all right, we have planes.
Yeah, we have planes, we have soldiers. All I'm seeing is this dude shouting, and I guess I'm inspired because he sort of seems to care about whatever he's shouting about, but I don't speak that language. I mean, do you have a translate? Oh, no.
Oh, wow. No, it's 10 million years in the future. You'd be like, what's a Jew?
You were probably some kind of monster. I mean, speaking as someone from 10 million years in the future, I'm glad.
Finally.
Yeah. But no, I mean, anyway, he shows them footage of that, and then that cuts to a bunch of silhouettes of various types of soldiers moving around, and that's about the middle 30 minutes of this movie.
Yeah.
And then eventually Avatar and his dumb group of idiot friends, an elf named Weehawk, a boobiter. An elfling who's just in the movie to be boobus.
Well, if you've seen any Ralph Bakshi thing, it's a lady in a Ralph Bakshi film,
which means she has a weird dump face, but also big bouncy boobs with lots of nipples showing.
Yeah.
That's what Eleanor is. And then you've got a robot that hangs out with them who started by trying to kill them named Necron 99. But then they fix him and he changes his name in the most 70s thing in the universe to Peace.
Great.
This piece of garbage came out in 1977, which means you had about a month between seeing this and seeing Star Wars, which fixed science fiction.
Yeah. Man, thank you, Star Wars, for fixing science fiction. We no longer have to suffer through things like Barbarella.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come at me, Internet.
Fantastic Planet. Movies like that where it's like, so, what's that one? Enemy Mine.
Yeah. That movie that stars Kenny Loggins versus Michael Bay's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Okay, I can see where you'd come up with that. Although, really, it's more Dennis Quaid with a beard versus the back co-pilot guy from Last Starfighter. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, granted, it's actually Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr., sure, but, I mean...
It's really Dennis Leary.
Dennis Leary and Lou Diamond Phillips.
That's it. That was Enemy Mine.
Enemy Mine. I'd see that.
Oh, shit, I'd watch the hell out of that. I'd watch that right now.
I'd watch The Last Starfighter right now, too, if I'm being honest.
If I'm being honest with you, and we're going to stop this podcast and go watch that.
Go watch The Last Starfighter, because it's got the Death Blossom. Good stuff, man.
Yeah, man, whenever I go to Outback Steakhouse, I always get that.
Yeah, in your case, it's the Morbid Death Blossom, I think they call it, yeah. And that just means that they bring you a normal Awesome Blossom, but it's floating in a hat filled with ranch.
They just bring it. My favorite.
Just a garbage bag stuck inside of a massive trucker hat filled with ranch dressing with an Awesome Blossom floating on top.
Yep.
And then there's like ranch frogs floating around, like lily pads of them.
Oh, the ranch frogs.
His famous majestic ranch frogs. Majestic burping ranch frogs. Anyway, so at the end of the stupid movie, Avatar finally manages to confront his evil brother Black Wolf in his like techno town. And then he shoots him with a gun. And that's the end of the movie. And it's the most disappointing ending you've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Switch. Okay. I mean, I guess spoiler alert for the shittiest movie ever. But the whole point of this film and of the role-playing game is it tells you in the beginning, like, oh, yeah, we didn't really go into it in the movie, but there are two forces in the universe, technology and magic. And they are always fighting. And technology was... in the lead, and it was rocking everything, and now magic is coming back, and it's winning, and technology is evil, just period. Technology is bad, magic is good, because magic means you're influencing things with your mind, but technology is you're doing it with your hands, and I'm like, okay, right. Who cares?
Okay, sure, I like hands-eye coordination. I mean, it's kind of a weird tack, and it's something you don't see in most modern games anymore, is the whole magic is good and technology is evil gambit.
Not in modern games, but being from the 70s and the people who would actually give a shit about this, it's that whole weird hippie, we should all be living out in the woods, in nature, and modern technology is ruining us, and it's the same people nowadays that are like, oh, everyone's looking at their cell phones instead of talking to each other, we're all zombies now, Deb!
Well, yeah, I was going to say, why is Ray Romano so angry?
I don't know, halfway through that I was like, why am I Ray Romano?
I know, it's like, man, Kermit's really mad about technology here. What's going on? I mean, normally, yeah, he sits around in a swamp with a banjo a lot, I understand.
That's... Oh yeah, he's really in touch with nature, and then he's like, oh, Miss Piggy, we need to stop using cell phones.
Oh, Miss Piggy, it's quite complicated for us to have sex without modern technology. It's hard to make a pig lay thousands of eggs.
Okay. So, that's your general conceit, is technology bad, magic good, fairies, and there's capital F fairy, which is, like, elves and fairies and gnomes and dwarves and whatnot.
There are no humans left.
No. The only human-ish people are mutants, and mutants sort of covers the entire gamut of actual, like, humanoid mutants, mutant lizards, weird pig people, shit like that.
Crows, for some reason.
For some reason, crows, and, okay, so we were, well, we weren't rewatching, but Jeff was inflicting this movie on his girlfriend, and I happened to come at that point, and just as a joke, some birds flew up in one of those scenes, and I was like, ah, I wonder if they have stats for those in the book, and he was like, yes, they do.
Yeah, they absolutely had stats, because I started reading this one first. And yeah, they absolutely have stats for every single thing you see in the film.
Yeah, if it gets any screen time, there are stats for it.
Yeah, with the weird exception, they get a page of description, but no stats. For in one shot of this movie, you get to watch Necron 99 riding around on what we just called all the way through our review of it, a horse ball.
Yeah, it looks like the anthropomorphic personification of a tuba solo is what he's riding around on.
That is Yeah, it's completely a tuba solo running around.
Yeah.
So picture that with a horse head on one end and two stubby little legs on the other end, and that's what everyone rides in these. We were calling them horse balls.
Yeah.
But apparently they're called Rosses.
Like yeah, Ross. Ross.
Yeah.
And they really want to get together with Rachel.
I would prefer to ride a Rachel, yeah, if I'm not, I mean, if I'm being honest, which I am. Yeah. Yeah, okay, so he's riding around on his Ross in front of a giant dragon that's just background stuff, which I'd say about becoming an aficionado of Ralph Bakshi movies, having seen most of them at this point, one of the things about Ralph Bakshi movies is half the shit he has in them just looks like stuff he was practicing at the same time.
Oh, yeah, it's just, oh, while I was doing this, I was doodling some random crap in the background, and here it is.
Yeah, he was just like, I was working on drawing a weird face, and so I just sort of... That's the thing in Cool World, is when they're wandering around through their Toontown in Cool World, there's just random faces floating through the sky in the background all the time. It's just like, oh, I was just doing that. I was just practicing my Plimpton, and I decided to just kind of, you know, just put it in there. Whatever. Put it in. Don't, I'm not wasting animation. I'm Ralph goddamn Bakshi. I use every piece of the pencil.
So yeah, the weird thing with this...
Oh, it's a dragon in the background. Yeah, I'm sorry.
The dragon is there, but the weird thing is... As we said, the end of the movie is Avatar, who is supposed to be, like, the personification of the good side of doing magic, because it's not mentioned in the movie, but in the RPG we have a split between regular magic and technomancy.
And technomancy is literally just being able to understand technology. There's no technology powers. It's just like, oh, can you work things? Then you're using technomancy.
Yeah, if you were an engineer or a mechanic... then you would be a technomancer, mm-hmm. because you can use the power of technology because it is separate from the power of magic.
Yes.
Which, okay, fucking Black Wolf has magic and technomancy, and Avatar is like, yeah, I'm all about the magic, let's do this. And then the end of the movie is him using a gun to kill Black Wolf, and I'm like, but isn't that a symbol of technology and old world violence that you're using to... Is the aftermath of this movie that Avatar becomes the new dictator?
Well, no, he just goes off to have sex with his student for the rest of his life.
Oh, good.
He even mentions it in the movie. He's like, yeah, she probably seems like she's way too young for me, right? But she's not. I'm going to pork her a whole bunch.
I've been alive for thousands of years, and but she's it's like, time for me to have sex with this weird elf fairy.
And she's what, like 14? Don't even worry about it, though. We're going to get into it. It's the 70s. You can do this. Ask David Bowie. Oh, too soon.
Oh, too soon.
Too soon. I'm
Way
sorry.
Way too soon.
R.I.P. David Bowie, who had sex with underage women in the 70s. But you know what? Everyone did. This elf did. Whatever Avatar is. I think the guys from Led Zeppelin are famous for that. I mean, you got your Roman Polanskis. It was just what you did in the 70s.
Yeah.
I was alive in the 70s for 23 days, and I'm pretty sure I had sex with a 21-year-old.
I'm pretty sure.
21-day-old, excuse me. I'm sorry. Probably also a 21-year-old, right? I mean, Roman Polanski, right? He was out there.
Roaming the fields.
Roaming the...
Wild Polanskis.
Just moving through suburban houses looking for pleasure. That's what...
that's great. I'm glad that we've done that on this show. The RPG.
The game. Sorry. We gotta finish the story. He pulls a gun out of nowhere and shoots Black Wolf with it. After saying the most dramatic second act or final act line of badassery you could ever have in a movie, which is, I'm glad you changed your last name, you son of a bitch. We don't know what their last names are, by the way, in the movie or the book.
No. No one knows. They're just Avatar and Black Wolf. That's it. Nothing else.
Last line that he says before he shoots his brother is, I'm glad you changed your last name. We don't know what he changed it from or to.
I assume Hitler.
Yeah, he changed it to Black Wolf Hitler, and it used to be Black Wolf Mengele. Yeah, it was Goebbels, Goebbels.
Goebbels.
Yes, Black Wolf Goebbels, and Avatar, who's still Avatar Goebbels. I mean...
yeah, he didn't change his last name.
Why did he change his last name? He's glad he didn't. but he takes a gun out and shoots him. There's no evidence that he owns a gun or has a gun or whatever, use a gun. He just pulls one out. It's like the opposite of a Chekhov's gun.
Oh, yeah. No, the problem I have with this is it ends with... a weird non sequitur line, and your main hero doing the exact opposite of what they should be doing. I'm like, oh, the payoff of this is Avatar's also an asshole.
Yeah,
great.
No, Avatar's totally an old asshole. He's gonna go have sex with his 14-year-old student. The book makes it just as creepy. It tries its hardest to make it not creepy that he's super into his student, but it can't.
No.
It's impossible. There's this whole section when it's describing him where he's like, oh yeah, he totally wants to do her and he's hot for it. He hates himself for how much he wants to do her. So instead of that, he just spends most of his time doing what he calls meditating on her navel.
Yeah. Which is just staring at her tits.
Which is just the creepiest thing you could imagine.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, if there's one thing that's super creepy, it's anything Ralph Bakshi does.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, Eleanor is drawn as basically a pair of boobs connected by a napkin.
True.
That's basically... I mean, and what's amazing is she looks like garbage in the movie, because everything in that movie is poorly drawn, but this book has worse art, somehow. Oh, yeah.
It's someone essentially doing the shittiest fan art. Yeah. Of Ralph Bakshi's already shitty art.
All the stuff in here looks like someone's submission to draw a Fraggles coloring book. All right, so okay, let's talk about the rules of this game, because we're 15 or 16 minutes in and we're still just randomly bagging on Ralph Bakshi again.
Well, yeah, because how can you not?
It's hard not to.
So this is very much a product of the time it came out, which is around the AD&D time.
Well, it's 1992-ish. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think you had second edition at that point, but you're right, it's around the AD&D times.
Around the AD&D yeah. times,
so you're rolling D20s, lots of D20s.
You've got the D20, and it does the thing that a lot of the people who are like, well, how do we differentiate ourselves from D&D? You want to roll low instead of high, so a natural one is good. Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Great, sure, whatever, reverse the D20, we're fine.
Yeah, so it's all roll-unders instead of rollovers.
Mm-hmm.
You have your primary attributes, which you just get a couple more than your standard, but it's still... Strength, intelligence, dexterity, charisma, constitution. You put perception in there instead of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get size and willpower. And yes. Size is just literally how big you are.
That's correct, yeah. It's just the size chart from, like, Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, yeah. Because you could be a tiny little, like, flying fairy, or you could be a big old mutant or whatever.
I don't even think they had the stats for playing as mutants. They just No. had, yeah, you have to play as these good guy races, and the good guy races are... Like, three colors of fairy, three colors of elf, and then gnome and dwarf.
Yeah, you can get, like, I'm a yellow elf, or I'm a brown elf, which is weird.
We've been talking about the brown elf for years, right? I mean, that's the elf that goes off to poop from his other elves and becomes a poop elf subrace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The poop elf.
Yeah, the poop elf. I mean, that's the thing with elves. If elves split up for too long, they turn into two kinds of elves.
Yeah, if an elf is around something for too long, he becomes an elf of that.
Yeah, so, you know, if an elf ever goes off, that's why elves go to the bathroom in groups.
Yeah, because you need to stick with others of your kind to contain your type of elf.
This is all stuff you can find in our book, Dwarves Are From Mars and Elves Are From Venus.
Our book, Dwarves Are From Jersey.
Jersey. Elves are from, what do we do for elves? Aren't they like
German?
They're either German or they're rednecks. I forget which one.
Eh.
Either way. You know what? There's two kinds.
There you go.
Yeah.
They split up.
They split up. The next thing you know, you got redneck elves.
Some of the elves moved from Germany and they went to the south and now you just got redneck elves.
Got the Appalachian elves.
The Elfalations.
Got them hillbilly elves. Just making super-powered mega whiskey in their super stills. Ooh, this is the best whiskey in all of Tarnation.
Ugh. So yeah, you get that as your primary attributes, and I will say this, point buy, that's nice.
You start with the average for your race, and then you buy points to raise the various stats in different ways, so you start with baseline competency, also nice.
Yeah, so if you're 10 is basically the average in a stat, just uh-huh. like in D&D.
Yeah.
But as a race, you might be like, oh, this race has a 12 in strength instead of a 10 because they're dwarves and they're stronger, or this race has like a 7 in charisma because they're dwarves and they're jerks.
Right.
Okay, whatever. But you can then spend your bonus points, which everyone just has like 40 points to spend,
mm-hmm.
on raising, or you can get points by lowering.
Yes.
So if you start out and you're like, oh, I'm straight 10s, I'm just completely average, you can go, all right, well, I'll lower a few of these that I'm not using down, and I'll get some bonus points, and then raise these up, whatever.
This is a great example of what we were talking about just recently in the afterthought, about how we don't want to roll for stats because no one wants to be forced to play a character with a low stat. This is a great solution to that. If you want to play a character with a low stat because you have a weird story to tell, then you can just lower that stat and raise some other stat in compensation.
Yeah, if you want to say, oh, I'm, like, chronically ill, I have a constitution that's, like, 4.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this gives you your points for going down to a 4 as a compensation for doing
and
that.
And he made the choice to do that, so it's a good system.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a basic system.
It's also because it is a game that is around the 90s, has a bunch of derived stats.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, like, your might and your spirit and your movement and your reaction speed.
It's the latest in a long line of games that doesn't have any kind of hex system or grid system on which combat occurs that still gives you an extremely granular speed mechanic for some reason.
Oh, yeah. They're like, oh, well, we need to know exactly what your speed is because reasons. I guess if someone's trying to run away from you.
Yeah, that's big. Or you have to run down a big hill and you can't bring your Ross. That's a major thing.
I can't bring my Ross. I can only bring my Chandler. And could he go any slower?
God damn it.
Yeah. I knew I would work that in there somewhere.
No, it's good. I can't think of any other jokes from that show because I don't remember it in the slightest.
Oh, yeah, well.
Plus, every other joke I can think is like, I can name the characters. I'm like, well, I guess I could ride a Phoebe. And then I'm like, no, that sounds unpleasant.
No. I mean, I would be riding.
For her.
Oh, right, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
Lisa Kudrow can do better.
I would be riding my Joey, but I would need to know how he's doing.
That is what he said.
Yeah. See? I've watched like 4 episodes of that miserable show.
Do you think they ever got together? Oh, wait, we know they got together. That was the end.
Of course they did.
Yeah, never mind. Okay.
Okay. So, in addition to that, you figure out there are 2 different versions of hit points in this.
Yeah,
you
do have shock points.
Yeah, you have shock points and then hit points.
Yes.
Shock points are they're the Rift's version of SDC and hit points of if you take a whole bunch of damage to your shock points, you'll fall unconscious, but you'll regenerate them faster. Hit points are you are actually like bleeding out.
Yeah, they're kind of like your subdual and lethal damage types, with the exception being that you take them both at the same time.
Yeah, well,
sort of. Depending. It's an interesting mechanic.
Unless someone hits you with their bare fist, then you'll only take shock points. If someone hits you with a weapon, no matter what, you'll take at least one hit point.
And then this is weird. Okay, let's say you got a sword. The sword normally does 5 dice of damage, but because you're playing as a tiny elf without especially good strength, you have to subtract damage from it based on your strength, which might either remove just numbers from it or might remove dice from it.
Any plus or minus of 3 removes or adds a die. So
correct.
If I get to, say, 3 dice, and everything in this is either a d20 or d6.
Mm-hmm.
So if I get to 3 dice and I'm plus 3, then instead of rolling 3 dice and plus 3, I'd roll 4 dice.
Correct. So let's say you're an elf and you have a sword that does 3 dice of damage and you try and hit a mutant with it. Here's how you do this. You roll 3 dice for your damage, and however much damage you roll there is shock dice. You do that much in damage. You also automatically do 1 hit point. For every die that is displaying a 5 or a 6, you also add a hit point of damage.
Well, it's for a 4 or 5, add 1, yeah. And then for a 6, you add 2.
That's correct, yeah. So for 3 dice, you're on average probably doing 10 to 11 shock points worth of damage, and you're probably doing maybe 2 to 3 hit points worth of damage with a regular 3 die swing.
Yeah, because the 1 die from using a weapon is only if you didn't do anything. So if I rolled all 1s and 2s, normally I would do no hit points, but because I have a weapon, I'll do 1. But if I did roll, say, a 5, I would still just do 1 hit point. I wouldn't add 1 on.
So shock points heal super fast. They heal over like a couple of hours, whereas hit points take months. And you know what? I'm tired of getting mad about this. I don't care anymore. Every old game does this. Every old game's like, oh, it takes months to heal from an injury. You should roleplay the process of lying around.
Yeah, which...
I'm sick. You're based on
a cartoon.
Yeah.
God damn it.
No, I know. And the thing is, every game did that, no matter what it's based on. It's like you don't remember all those parts in Star Trek where people had to lie around for surgery for months. Instead, they went into the room and either Bones or Crusher was just like, beep, 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 you're good. Get out of here. Get out of my room. You're cool. But, you know, that Star Trek game sure is like, oh yeah, if you take an injury, oh, you're out for a month, sailor. You lie down in bed and read this dictionary.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm sick of being mad about it. I'm turning over a new leaf. Fine, it takes forever to heal in every game before 2010.
I'm still sick of it, I don't care.
Alright.
But you have a recovery stat,
mm-hmm.
And then there is a giant chart that you will look at and go, here's what my recovery stat versus time passed. So if you're like, oh, it's been 9 days and my recovery is 6, how many hit points have I gotten back? And you can look at the chart.
Yeah, so there you go. So you can play as about 8 or so races, and they're all just little fairies and elves. One of the things that infuriated me about this game is it's got the stats for all of the main characters of the movie, for the Wizards movie, but it doesn't tell you which type of elf or fairy or whatever all of them are.
Yeah, you get 1 or 2, so it's like Eleanor, our main boob protagonist, is an elfling, which is a combination of an elf and a fairy.
Right, and that means that normally they're just sort of big elfy-looking things, But eventually, if they practice a lot of magic for a long time, they get their fairy wings back.
Yeah, so you have just someone that's as big as an elf, but has fairy wings.
Yes.
Great.
Weehawk is a elf. He's the leader of, like, Montagar elves or something. There are two kinds of elves. There are yellow elves and brown elves. I think there might also be blue elves for the bad guy elves or something. But we don't know which kind he is. I guess you can kind of guess that he might be a yellow elf because he has kind of yellow skin.
Maybe?
I mean, let's be clear. Weehawk looks like the Charlie Brown of elves. He's, like, mostly misshapen giant head.
Yeah, so we have the red elf, yellow elf, brown elf. We have a dwarf or a gnome, and then you can be different types of fairies, so a mountain fairy or a wood fairy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the elflings.
Right. And the elflings, I think, come in regular and blue.
Yeah, there's just...
Again, it's because the movie. The movie has one shot once of some hard-trodden or hard-beaten-looking elfling prostitutes.
Yeah, well, that's the big thing.
Yeah.
Is in the mutant lands, if you're an elfling, you are usually considered to the racist people. They're like, oh, you're half elf, half fairy. You're too mutated and weird to hang out with us.
Yeah.
But then in Scorch, they're like, oh, you're too elfy and fairy-y to hang out with us mutants. So they don't fit anywhere and they become prostitutes unless you're in Montagar, the main all-inclusive, everyone's happy city. And then they have a progressive knowledge of things because they're going to have an elfling be their queen.
All the stuff that this book told me about that movie, I did not pick up from watching that movie.
No, you get nothing from that movie.
Yeah.
That movie is boring and terrible.
Well, I mean, the weird thing about this book is I was going in going like, ah, oh, I remember all these things I hate about this movie. It's set 10 million years in the future, and somehow Black Wolf has a bunch of pristine footage of Nazis from World War II. He doesn't have, like, the Discovery Channel special on Nazis. He has, like, the film reel that Hitler shot. But it's like, how did that survive for 10 million years? We don't even have that shit now.
Yeah.
And the answer in the book is that this isn't Earth. This is a world very similar to Earth, except that magic makes it so that old technology lasts longer.
Except it then also says, yes, this is literally Earth.
I know. It goes both ways, but it's like, it literally thought that whoever wrote this book also watched the movie, also got mad that footage lasted for 10 million years, but then took the second step of justifying it in the book they wrote about the movie.
Yeah. This book goes out of its way to try and justify and include anything
from
the movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like, okay, fairies are like 6 inches tall, except that Eleanor, the main female character in the movie, is a 4 foot tall fairy. So what's this deal? What's that all about? All right, well, I guess I got to write this role-playing game. So there are half fairy elves that exist. Yeah. And if they practice their magic, they get all their powers. And then it makes sense that they get to be the queen of a city, which is currently ruled by a president.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because normally it's ruled by a queen, but then the queen died and her husband is
her
serving in the interim.
It's her dad.
The queen.
Oh, okay.
The queen's husband, her father.
Right. Her father.
Yeah.
Is the president.
Is the president because he can't be the king because you can only have a queen. So he is the steward of Montagar called a president.
Now, he doesn't go in. This is one thing I was hoping it would explain is why is he wearing a goofy mask in the movie?
Oh, because Ralph Bakshi is an idiot and I hate him. That's why.
Because I was hoping, like, it went out of its way to be like, why is there one shot of Necron 99 wandering around near a giant dragon animation? That's a fog dragon. There are three kinds of weather dragons, and all of them live and wander around the planet, and they're quite dangerous sometimes, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, this is going out of its way to explain a 4-second shot in this movie.
Yes.
But then, at the same time, why is the president of Elftown wearing a stupid, like, Harlequin mask? Don't worry about it.
No, it's cool. That's just what he does.
We got this.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So in addition to all of the hit points and that, you get luck points,
mm-hmm.
and you only get like 3 to start with, but it's your standard brownie, karma, whatever.
Buy your way out of jail. This game's unusual in that it doesn't have an especially rigorous mechanic for how you get them back. Just advice to not give them out too fast.
Oh yeah, it's just, a lot of this is per the GM's discretion, has a bunch of that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We'll get into it when we start talking about, like, the magic system and stuff later, but this book is really big on saying, hey, maybe something might go wrong, or maybe you want to adjust things. It's up to you. You figure it out.
Have fun, kids.
You do it.
Whatever, I like that kind of advice.
Now, it also has an advantages and disadvantages system. Hooray!
All right.
Are you done hating on those yet?
No, I'm still... Although this one was relatively inoffensive, all things considered. It wasn't the worst one I've seen.
No, because it didn't have any that were like, this is not a disadvantage. Clearly, if you picked one of the disadvantages, it fucked you in some way.
Yeah, some of them were a little offensive, I think. I mean, I think this was one of the games that had stuff like racist as a disadvantage and so on.
Well, you can hate certain things, which
includes,
like, I hate mutants.
Yeah.
Which led to one of the funniest sample characters, who had his drawbacks were he hated mutants, so he had to like roll willpower anytime he saw a mutant, or he would just be like, oh, I'm gonna kill that guy.
But he had a phobia of combat.
He had a phobia of melee.
Yeah.
So he still had a sword, but was afraid to fight.
Well, let's be clear here. I was amazed by this character design because he had a phobia of melee combat. And I was like, oh, okay, so this guy's going to make like an archer and he's going to hang back and shoot. And he has a bow, but he's way more skill invested in his melee capabilities than he does in his archery.
Oh, yeah. So he's just super
like,
afraid.
It seemed like he built his character by just sort of opening a box and shaking words out of it and was like, that, I'm that.
There we go.
Don't worry about it. Well, your character doesn't make any sense. He's very well trained to the sword. How did that happen if he has a phobia of melee? Is he a veteran? Oh, no, he's very young. He's brand new.
Yeah, no, he hasn't even seen any combat yet.
So does he have PTSD? No, nothing like that. He's just terrified of melee combat, but has spent years training in it.
No, he's just a little kid, and he loves his mom very much. I'm going to see Darth Vader as a little kid. So you get that, and this is also part of your points that you get at the start. You get those 40 character creation points, so that goes into stats. You get advantages or disadvantages with them. It's all the same point system.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to, and you're like, oh, I don't care, I'll take the stats that I have and use all 40 to just buy advantages and have no disadvantages, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to, you can take some disadvantages, lower your stats, do whatever, get a bunch of random crap. Some of them are better than others in the advantage disadvantage, because that's going to happen.
That's very true, yeah.
Because you're going to find things where it's like, oh, you got a phobia, and you've got like you got 2 points for it because you're afraid of something you'll never see. So it's like, I'm afraid of dragons. Okay, there are 4 in the world. Who cares?
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. And why would you be afraid of them? All they do is sort of sheepishly retreat into the distance.
But then even if you are like, oh yeah, I'm scared of dragons. I run away from them. Okay, good. That's a good response to a dragon.
That's a good idea.
Good.
I've always loved buying advantages like that. Like, I hate skeletons. Every time I see skeletons, I gotta beat them up.
Well, yeah, it's the same thing with, like, oh, I hate mutants. Oh, well, you know this is a game where elves and mutants are, you know, at war.
Yeah.
So that's... Okay, why do I get points for that?
I get real angry when I take damage. That's my power. Or my disadvantage.
It's like playing a World War II RPG, and you're like, oh, I have the disadvantage of I hate Nazis?
I hate
and you're
Nazis.
Like, what?
But no, get this, though. I'm Italian.
Oh, wait for it, though. I'll surprise you.
Didn't see that coming.
I also have the disadvantage of Jewish.
Oh, that is a tough disadvantage. Be one of those Italian hate Jews.
Italian Jews that hate Nazis, but I got so many points for it.
Anyway, moving on. There's a skill system in this game.
And you get an interesting thing. So a lot of RPGs at this time also had this, but it was pick your careers.
Yeah, it does the skill package thing. It's very similar to the way Ninjas and Super Spies worked.
Yeah, so you can either choose to do something where you pick one, and it's all I've done is this. So you go, okay, this is my primary, and whatever skills it lists in that, so if I, say, picked the assassin as my career,
mm-hmm.
all of the skills that come with assassins, so like ranged combat and sneaking and all of that, I would get a really large amount of skill points in those, but it would be the only things I got.
Yes.
Your other option, you can do a primary and a secondary. Mm-hmm. So your primary, you'll get a pretty good amount in, and then you'll get a few points in your secondary.
Yeah.
Or so you can pick 3 and just have 3 tertiaries, so you get a whole ton of skills that you have points in, but none of them are particularly high.
Yeah. Which is actually a really good choice if you have, like, a really high stat somewhere, and you're like, oh, well, I'll just take a bunch of skills that are related to that stat, because I've already only got to roll under a d20 on it.
Which, honestly, is not going to happen very much, because the skills in this... Most of them are either neutral or difficult.
Yeah.
Which neutral means you just have, like, your stat as the baseline, and then you can add skill points onto there. Or, if it's difficult, it's your stat -1.
Yeah.
And there's only 2 game or skills in the game which are easy, which is swimming and climbing, which you get to add +1 to your stat.
Right.
And then there are impossible skills which start at 0 no matter what.
Right. And you can get better at them through practice and buy points and bonuses in them.
Yeah, so if you picked the mage as your career, normally magic is an impossible skill. It starts at 0. So if you picked mage, you could get points in there, but that would be the only way you could get points into that. You don't just start with some.
That That is exactly right.
Yeah.
All right, and then magic itself is just one of the skills. We just mentioned that. And then you use it with building blocks, spell-building systems to kind of build your own spells in this game, which is something you saw a lot in early 90s stuff, where it was like, we're going to get away from the rigmarole of two-thirds of the player's handbook being spells by just adding a couple of guidelines and then letting players go nuts and create their own.
Except you don't get to do it on the fly. The weird thing is you have to make up your spell and go, all right, here's the spell that my guy does. I specifically have a spell that, at a range band of like 200 feet, I can cast an illusion that looks like a wall. And that's one spell that you know. If you try to change it and go, oh, well, I want my illusion spell to now be, instead of a wall, be a dragon. No, that's a different spell.
That's a whole different spell. You got to start from scratch and spend skill points on it. And then there's a whole bunch of things for bonuses based on whether or not you're holding a wand or whatever it is that makes you more comfortable when you're casting spells.
Everyone, unless you buy in the advantages section, there is a I can cast spells without a focus.
Yeah.
Everyone needs a focus. And the focus can be I need a wand, or I need to chant, or I need to do complicated arm movements.
Which, you know, they got that chanting from that stupid scene in the movie with those two priests.
Oh, yeah.
God, do you remember that scene?
Well, that's the only reason why cleric is one of the careers you can pick.
Do you think those two are the gnomes, too, to explain why this book seems to insist on gnomes? Or is it just like, you know what, there's gnomes, they're between elves and dwarves, don't worry about it.
Well, someone once said Avatar looked like a gnome, so gnomes have to exist.
But I guess those two are the dwarves, because they gotta come from somewhere. But there's a scene in the movie where there's like this teapot-shaped, like, church, and there's two priesty kind of guys in there that are, all they do is a weird routine that kind of makes fun of Jewish people and priests.
There you go.
And then they die.
Yep. Good job. You did it.
Yeah, and it's not really connected to the rest of the film in any meaningful way.
No, well, that's because nothing in the film is connected to the rest of the film in any meaningful way.
The one thing it has going for is it's got those two soldier guys that are always in the... I was surprised to see how many quotes they get at the top of paragraphs in this book are the two soldiers in gas masks that just do shtick in the movie, Max and Fritz.
Oh, Fritz! They shot Fritz! Oh, I'll get you! Oh, I'll shoot all of you! Oh, Fritz!
And then he gets up and he's like, oh, but I'm okay, Max. I'm actually okay. I lived.
Oh, you're ruining my monologue! Oh, Fritz! Oh, and then he accidentally shoots him. Oh, they got you, Fritz! Okay, great. Thank you for that fucking 5 minutes of shtick in the middle of this film.
And they keep doing them. They keep cutting back to these two soldiers. And then occasionally there's the third soldier, the fat one, that's also with them.
Yeah.
And then all they do is they just do obvious jokes. Yeah, like, it's 5 minute long obvious jokes.
It's like, oh, well, hey, man, we're going to war. Oh, I don't want to go to war.
I don't want to fight. Other people got a right to live, too, and I don't even want to have to kill people. Other people I don't want to kill the bunnies and the flowers.
Oh, but Black Wolf says he's got a thing that'll make us invincible. We can't lose.
Oh, okay, well, let's go then.
Oh, fucking, oh, God, there is a hatred for this deep in my soul, and the problem is it taints the book for me.
Yeah, the book wouldn't be that bad if it wasn't for this.
If the thin veneer of wizards was scraped off of this, and it was just, here's a generic role-playing game where you can play some elves, and there are some weird mutants, and you fight them, I'd be like, okay, all right, I'm on board. This isn't the best game I've ever seen, but it is by far not the worst.
No, it's just deeply boring without wizards. With wizards, it gives us something to talk about. It gives us hooks. We can get right back in there and start clawing at Ralph Bakshi.
And the weird thing is, it does mention that a wizard is a very specific thing, and only Avatar and Black Wolf are wizards. You might practice magic, but that does not make you a wizard, because they practice wizardry.
Yeah, they do a whole different thing. Which, based on the movie, no, they don't.
You know, well, it's what can you do if you're a wizard outside instead of a mage? Mostly conjure cigars and turn lizards into like lamps.
Yeah, float backwards onto your horse ball and everyone laughs at you. What else? I mean,
go to hell.
Yeah, Avatar goes to hell at one point. No, Black Wolf goes to hell at one point and comes back with some demons.
Yeah, Black Wolf goes to literal actual hell. Finds the souls of dead generals, brings them back as demons, and he's sad because he couldn't find Hitler's soul in hell, which he was looking for.
Jeez.
Which I don't know. Does that mean Ralph Bakshi's saying that Hitler didn't go to hell? Is that what he's saying
here? Yeah, that's what he's saying. Well, he's saying Hitler doesn't believe in hell. He's saying Hitler was Jewish.
That, of course. So he's an Asheron instead.
Perhaps the most offensive thing I've ever said on the show just now. I don't even know. I mean, one of the things about Black Wolf's army that we can't stress enough is that it's just random assortments of rotoscoped footage that's been converted to silhouettes. That just they just show for hours. Oh, do you have some footage of a bunch of old medieval knights running around on some horses? All right, we'll convert that to a silhouette and put it in there.
Which is the weirdest thing, because the whole point of Black Wolf's army is that it's supposed to be technology-based. The whole thing in here is how Black Wolf and the mutants and everything are still clinging to technology, so they use tanks and planes and guns and their bombs.
And their bombs. And their bombs. And their bombs. And their guns.
And zombies.
Zombies. Yeah. Zombie.
E.
Oh.
But all of the weird, like, rotoscoped footage is just, like, medieval knights.
Yeah, medieval knights, and then occasionally some other types of, like, Vikings or soldiers, and it's just old black and white silhouettes running around.
Very, very rarely you'll be like, oh, look, and a tank.
Yeah.
Good.
Mostly it's, like, just flags and spears and pikes and stuff. And then also badly done, bouncy, like, 1920s-style bouncing as if there's music playing animation of demons just walking around on top of that footage.
Yeah, well, the editing in this was like, well, we have this weird, bouncing, goofball demon footage, and all of this actual human rotoscope stuff, what do we do with it? Oh, throw it all together.
Oh, just put it on top of each other. Well, it looks like they're walking into each other, and they're not, I mean, some of them are, I mean, it just breaks your concept of dimensions. None of them seem to be connected to any other.
Bill, hold on. You realize you're working on a Ralph Bakshi film here. No one watching this cares.
This is something you fall asleep to because you're stoned in the first 10 minutes, and then you wake up at the end and go, wow, man.
Guys, have you seen this movie? It's amazing.
Oh, it changed my perception of war.
Good. Great. You have a half-remembered dream about wizards and Nazis, and it changed everything for you.
Oh, my gosh.
I hate you. I hate everyone.
You know what? It's still not the worst Ralph Bakshi movie ever since we watched that one about growing up in New York in the 70s.
Yeah, that deeply racist and boring movie.
Yeah, that is. That's it's got some homophobia. It's got some transphobia. Just kinda,
oh yeah, it's amazing. It throws everything in there.
It's even mean to the disabled.
Yeah, it's a giant pot of being the worst person possible.
Yeah, and then it cuts to live action, and he starts doing all the shit from the movie in live action. He's just running around telling a black woman about the how they should be friends because she was in a dream he had.
I had a dream about how awesome your butt is. Let's be friends.
He's like, oh my gosh, it's the girl from my dream. Look, you need to be my friend. In my dream, I pimped you out for like 20 minutes, and then you got beat up real bad, and then I beat you up real bad, and then I threatened you with a bottle, and then I changed my mind, and then we were friends.
Yep.
Come with me. I'm a white guy. And she's like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, everything up to the okay is probably a standard thing that happens in New York, though.
It's a normal New York pickup line.
Yeah, walking along the streets of New York, I have to imagine a crazy white person runs up to you and goes, hey, I had a dream about you, and we were best friends, and you need to be my friend right now, or else I'll beat you up, but I love you so much. I'm pretty sure that's New York.
That's the Humans of New York blog from start to finish.
Yeah.
It's that or in some insufferable hipster.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's either some guy runs up to the Humans of New York guy and is like, take a picture of me! I got a pigeon in my shirt! Or some guy who's like, take a picture of me! I have an artisanal pigeon in my shirt.
That's it! That is New York. You are either crazy or ironically crazy. Yeah, this is coming from California. Suck a dick, East Coast.
Take that. We're sick of your movies about how great your city is.
Yeah, fuck
just
you.
Fucking stop it. Take your Woody Allen and stick him up your ass.
And for everyone who isn't in America, this has been East Coast, West Coast Feud with System Mastery.
Thank you very much. We're waiting for a response from the East Coast version of System Mastery, which is, as of course, performed by dwarves.
Of course.
Of course.
So the only other thing to really get into that is weird in this, outside of the magic system, which is that weird component where you're like, oh, here's range. Did you want it to be right next to you? That's nothing. It's 5 feet away from you. That's one point.
One magic point and so on. Yeah. Can affect the dragon summoning spell, for example, costs like 22 spell points to cast because it summons a dragon from anywhere in the world.
Yeah. Because the summoning is one component, so you could be like, oh, if you're summoning, like, a bird, that's one.
Yeah.
And then it goes up the list for different sizes, and then for 12 points, it is dragon. But then, if you had just summon dragon and nothing else as your spell, it would be, I can summon a dragon that is standing right next to me.
Yeah.
So, good.
Great, awesome, there he is. I did it, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, that's gonna be the character I build, I'll tell you right now. My character's nothing but things that can summon stuff that's already there.
Yeah.
That's going to be my character.
Look, guys, I'm a wizard. I summoned a thing that's already here.
I did it. It's wizardry.
But you'd have to go and get the distance is a different power. So you go, okay, great. All right. In distance, I'll put down that I can do something anywhere in the world, which is like 10 points. So now I've got a 22-point spell, which is impossible to cast.
Right. Okay, so the last thing to really talk about is probably the combat system in here.
Yeah.
Which is very close to unremarkable D&D style. You roll under instead of rolling over. You roll initiative. It's all pretty much the same. The one thing I thought was kind of innovative about the combat system is that you can buy reductions in your initiative in exchange for reductions in your chance to hit. So, for example, if you're going on initiative 17 and you really want to swing at 15 so you can go before a guy, you can take a minus 2 to hit and drop your initiative to a 15.
Well, technically, initiative is still up, so you'd have to add to your initiative, but whatever.
Whatever. You get the gist of what I'm saying.
Yeah, you can go faster by swinging less accurately.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a cool trick that you don't see in a lot of games.
Yeah, the nice thing about that is it generally doesn't say that the NPCs should do this.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I sacrifice 3 so that I go before you. And the other guy's like, all right, I sacrifice 2 so I go before you. Eat a dick.
Yeah, it would become an arms race normally, but it does say the NPCs don't normally do it.
Yeah, because the way combat works is the GM has to declare, this is what the bad guys do. Then the PCs can declare what they do. So they've already said, all right, I'm going to jump out a window. I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to run away. Whatever they're doing. And then you get to go, oh, well, he's going to jump out a window, and he goes before me, so he's going to get to do that before I can shoot him, so I'm going to take a penalty and shoot him first.
Right. Another thing about this book that I thought was pretty impressive is that it is sufficiently violent to make sense for the movie, because the movie doesn't have a whole lot of characters brushing off hits.
Oh, well, the damage in this is insane.
Yeah, everything's lethal.
Yeah, the lowest damage you can do is 2 dice, and that's if you throw a small rock.
Yeah.
Everything else is like, oh, did I shoot you with a gun? 4 dice of damage. Did I shoot you with a bow? 4 dice of damage. We don't care. Everything does, like, between a 4 to 6.
Yeah, which makes the game, because you don't have a whole lot of hit points to start with, so the game is very lethal.
Oh, yeah. If someone manages to shoot you with, say, a longbow that does 5 dice of damage, and they just roll well, you're probably sitting at maybe 20 shock points and a few hit points, and if they roll, like, 3 sixes in their 5 dice, you die. You're dead. Goodbye.
Yeah. There was also I thought this was an interesting thing. There's a rule in this book. It's supposed to be like a suggested house rule, which I've never seen before. And it seems like the sort of thing that should be super obvious, but it basically is telling of the times, is if your character sacrifices himself for the good of the other characters in the party, and it would the damage he takes for sacrificing himself would render him unplayable, then you should not be forced to start your character at level 1 compared to everyone else, and instead should get a new character who's as powerful as everyone else, like when they get to the next town.
Yeah.
It's like, don't, you know, if someone does a heroic thing, don't punish them by making them start with a level 1 character. Give them a good character again.
Yeah.
I thought, I was like, oh, that's a good house rule. It's nice that, it's like the training wheels of never do that, you know, never like, oh, your character died, you're level 1 now, you have to hang out with these other guys who are level 10.
Which is the dumbest thing, because at that point you may as well just be like, all right, well, you guys have fun, then I'm leaving.
Yeah, I'm going to leech XP for 5 turns, because if there's one thing I hate, it's tabletop role-playing games from video games. Because that's what that is. If you're a level 1 guy hanging out with level 10 people, you're like, all right, well, one fight will make me level 3, so this isn't that bad.
But you're still just, oh, what do? Oh, you sit in the back, and you're just there to get the XP while these guys do stuff.
Exactly. So, anyway, I thought that was kind of a neat house rule to see. There's a couple of innovative ideas in here.
And you get, instead of armor adding to how difficult it is to hit you, it just takes shock point, hit point off the damage total.
It's just soak.
Same thing with shields, but shields you have to actually parry in order to get their soak from.
Yeah.
And you do have dodge, which you can either do a passive dodge, which depending on your skill level will be like a minus 1 to a minus 3 to someone's attack.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can say, I am actively dodging, and if you actively dodge, then if after someone hits you, you can try and roll your dodge skill and negate the hit.
Okay. So, one of the things we always do at the end of every episode of System Mastery is talk about the best and worst things from this game. So, I'm going to start right off the bat by asking John, what was your favorite thing about Ralph Bakshi's Wizards, the role-playing game?
Okay.
I'm sorry, I want to know what your favorite thing about the movie was.
Oh, my favorite thing about the movie, which we already answered when we reviewed it, was that it ended and I didn't have to watch it anymore, but then you played it again and it negated that. So now I don't like anything.
You hate all things. What was your favorite thing about this role-playing game?
I liked the magic system as much as it's sort of weird and wonky that you have to make a spell for everything.
Mm-hmm.
It did at least have rules for if something is close to what you were normally casting, you can just adjust the difficulty or it takes more spell points. So if it was like, normally I have a spell that shoots a laser 100 feet.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is at 150 feet, you can spend an extra spell point or make it more difficult and just extend the range by one or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, as long as it's basically the same spell, you can adjust a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it also gave the advice, which was wonderful for an adjustable magic system, which is, your players are probably going to try and make the ultimate spell that will be used for everything. Don't let them do this. That's stupid.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank you.
Thanks. That's good advice for a game that has a modular spell construction system. I mean, that'd be great advice to give, for example, in a GURPS game.
Yeah, they're like, someone is going to try and math out, this is the one thing that I can do that always works in every situation and just lets me win the game. If they do that, either tell them, no, you can't do that, or say, well, the reason that would work is because of which you can't actually do. Because he gave some examples, and he was like, oh, you can't actually do those within the system.
The nice thing is that it doesn't say, oh, let them do it, but punish them for it. Which is usually what you see in these games. It's like,
this was very non-adversarial.
Yeah, it was just like, no, just have a quick conversation, which is really good advice.
Yeah, I will say that is the little advice sections in this, very good. So, the magic system, good. I like the modular magic system. It's interesting to me. I mean, even though everyone's going to go, well, I made a fireball, and I made a teleport, and I made whatever.
Yeah.
Because these are the spells I know. At least it gives you the option to do weird things.
Sure.
Okay. So that's mine. What is your favorite thing in Wizards?
Okay, my favorite thing in Wizards, again, the non-adversarial tone is really nice.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's great. There's a lot of interesting advice in this game that I was not expecting to find in an old game like this that's kind of modernized advice that's good for players and DMs alike to read. I mean, the game is unreasonably lethal, so it's not like it's the best advice because it doesn't really work. It's like, no, don't send your players into something that'll kill them. Everything would kill them. Other than that, I'd say my favorite thing in this, geez, I'm going to say the innovations in the combat system. The whole reducing initiative to go faster, the swinging wildly thing, that's smart. I'm surprised I've never seen that before.
Okay.
So I thought that was pretty clever. I was impressed to see it. I'm sure someone's going to point out to me that it's broken for the following 10 reasons.
Well, here are 5 different RPGs that use that system that you don't know about.
Either way. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a pretty clever innovation. It's a good thing to be able to play with the initiative system like that won't break the game. Because it's still, you get to go once on that 20. It's not like if you go fast enough, you go twice.
Yeah.
Because that would break it. All right. What would you say is your least favorite thing?
The skill system in this is kind of not great when you start.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, you're going to have, unless you are like, oh, I went specifically in the, I only have one career, which gives me like +6 to whatever skill.
Yeah.
Most of the time, I was looking at it, like, they have sample characters.
You have
and
these terrible chances to succeed, yeah.
You're awful. It's like, oh, you have to roll under. What am I rolling under? Like a 6? What?
Yeah.
No, that's not ever going to happen. Like, the highest skill in their sample character was an 8.
Yeah.
And that was the best thing that he did.
Yeah, you're supposed to get better over time in this game, but you're not, it's one of those games where, you know, for as much as I was talking about how the stats give you baseline competency in this game, it's not really true. The skills kind of break that for you when your character starts as a complete nitwit.
Oh, yeah. It's the problem of a level 1 starting character in this is basically just slap fighting his way through existence until he gets to the point where he can do something.
Well, you know, it's one of those things that ruined 2nd edition D&D for me. Like, I remember when I was coming into 3rd and 4th edition, and I'll give a rare compliment to 3rd edition here, 2nd edition had those thief skill chart percentages.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? It was like, what's your chance to pick locks at level 1? Oh, like 18% if you're a specific race. What? I'm never going to try and roll that. Why would I roll? Especially if it'll put me in danger to roll this. Oh, you say my hide is a 10%? So I have a 10% chance to hide from those? Yeah, I'll hide from those orcs. Yeah, let me try that.
Yeah, let me do that.
They immediately see you and stab you to death. Why do I have this skill? This is pointless. I feel like I have the same chance to hide that the fighter does.
And basically you do.
Yeah. So that's the sort of thing that ruined me, was when you start your character's skill percentage is unreasonably low, they will not even try to use them.
No, and it's the same thing here. The only things people are really going to try and use are, like, the combat skills, because you have to. And unless you're making them fight people that are just as idiotic as they are...
Which you are.
Which you are. Yeah. Which, again, at that point, you're just slap fighting your way through things. It's, I shoot at you. Okay, it shoots off into the distance. I shoot at you. It shoots off into the distance. I run at you and swing my sword. You whiff. Okay, I swing my sword at you. I whiff. Okay, wonderful. This is dumb. Why are we doing this?
Right.
So, there's that. I think that's probably the worst thing in the book for me, is that beginning baseline skill set where probably about, like, 1 in 4 times you'll succeed.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's me. What about you?
I'd say my least favorite thing in this is the unusually slavish devotion to statting out everything in that movie. I mean, there's no reason. There's so much... It's a Bakshi movie, which means there are just random nonsense things in every frame of the film. You know, for every time there's a major character having a serious conversation, if you look behind him, there is a stupid-looking cartoon demon bouncing around.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely a tiny pig man with a boner trying to talk an elfling hooker into having sex with him in the background of everything.
Yeah, just because that's what it... I mean, it's almost like he just hired Sergio Aragonés to come in and just doodle all over the margins of his movie. He was like... Or in that Futurama episode where they were directing the film... And they were like, yeah, just the extras should be running around in the background and throwing pies. You can't have a boring part to this. So every background should have 80 guys in it just running around doing whatever. That's the thing you get in Bakshi movies. But this book was like, well, let's stat that shit. What, there's crows flying overhead in a shot? Those crows get stats.
Well, the book is only, to be fair, about 120 pages long,
yeah.
Which means they were like, oh God, we need to pad this.
Yeah. It's interestingly slavish. I guess I could put it at. It's very detailed for what it is. But the thing is, I hated wizards.
Oh, yeah. It's mind-bogglingly bad. Like, I don't understand how any studio would have seen that and gone, oh, yeah, we'll put that out.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a story to how Bakshi movies come into existence. Nowadays, I actually know the answer to it. It's Kickstarter. He has a new movie he just finished his Kickstarter for.
Yeah, because every dumb idiot who has nostalgia for a movie they didn't actually watch is like, oh, yeah, Bakshi, I know that name.
Well, no, there's like a whole kind of sub-community of animators who were... I mean, he's just like pre-John Kricfalusi, John Kricfalusi.
Oh, I was about to say, yeah. He's basically the 70s Kricfalusi.
Yeah, because Kricfalusi nowadays, you hire Kricfalusi to do your project, and you don't just get an animation that's very bouncy and very fluid and very weird-looking. You also get 10 years of him whining about creative control on blogs.
Yep.
That's how that works. That's what you get from Kricfalusi, is a quality project, and then him bitching forever.
Yay.
But Bakshi appears to be at least... one of the more interesting things about this book is that Bakshi has a blurb in the back of it that, like, it actually has a message from the creator, and it has Ralph Bakshi expounding on his thoughts about how this game exists. And it's funny because he's so mercenary of a person that his answer is, you know, when they ask him, hey, what do you think about the fact that there's this game? He's like, oh, I'm really happy that Wizards exists and that people enjoy it, and don't you worry, because I've realized that people still love Wizards, so I'm going to start selling shit. I'm going to have t-shirts and pencils and more movies are coming, and don't you worry, if you want to spend money on Wizards, I'm Ralph Bakshi. Let me just put my address down in a list of places where you can send money or spare change.
Here's a P.O. box if you've got a check that you want to send me for nothing.
Or just some bottle caps or, I don't know, spare change, whatever you got.
God bless.
God bless. If you got some of your wife's makeup sponge removers, I'll take some of those. And
that's my fetish.
Maybe some hair. I'm Ralph Bakshi.
I'm Ralph Bakshi, and I have all the fetishes.
I'm Ralph Bakshi, trash pervert.
God damn you, Ralph Bakshi, you stupid trash pervert. I hate you so much.
I don't know if that's true or not.
But it is now.
I like to assume it is.
It's on the internet. It's on the internet, so it's true.
He's into trash. There you go. Would you play Ralph Bakshi's Wizards?
Oddly enough, I think I probably would. Like, it's easy enough to get into. It doesn't seem like it'd be a great game, but it's basically like if someone said, hey, would you play AD&D 2nd Edition? I'd be like, all right, sure,
whatever.
Fine.
Yeah, it's not that terrible. I'd play this, but just to be mean, I'd skin it into something else.
Good.
I'd be like, oh yeah, let's play Wizards, but I'm using it to play Star Wars.
I can create my own force powers. Good.
Yeah, perfect. I got it all set. Let's see. The dwarf is a Wookiee, and...
Awesome, and I summon a dragon.
Yeah, I summon a dragon. A crate dragon from the Sands of Tatooine.
Duh.
I know everything about the Star Wars Expanded Universe.
Good job.
Woo! All right, so there you go. That's Ralph Bakshi's Wizards.
It is.
Yeah, and this was a hard game to find. So, of course, special thanks to Midjack from Something Awful, who sent us the money to buy this game, because it's rare. and we found it at one bookstore in Alaska, and he was very adamant that we review this bad boy and funded it, even though it was a tricky one to find. So special thanks.
Yep, thank you very much for that.
Paradoxically, it's very easy to find the movie of Wizards if you, for some reason, would like to torture yourself.
Don't.
It's on YouTube. You can just watch it there whenever you want. Yeah. Don't, though.
Just don't do it.
So there you go. So special thanks for that. And as always, if you have a game you'd like us to review, drop us a line. You can get us at systemmastery@gmail.com or at any of our social medias, System Mastery on Facebook or Twitter. You can find us just straight up on our own website, our shiny very own website, systemmasterypodcast.com, where you can find new episodes, old episodes, make recommendations, drop comments, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, if you want to go on there and argue with other people on the internet about Ralph Bakshi, please do.
That'd be fun. Also, we have a Patreon. You can support us there. If you do that, then you get our bonus content. Any level you support us at on the Patreon is enough to unlock more podcasts. We do a bonus content episode after every System Mastery where we make characters in the game that we just reviewed. So we're going to be making a couple of Wizards characters in just a minute here. It's going to be terrible. We're going to have a bad time. Actually, I don't even think we'll get done with that today because we have a party in an hour.
Yay, parties! Yay. That's what we do here. All we do is podcast and party.
We're like the Andrew WKs of podcasting.
Hell yeah.
I mean, unless he has a podcast. I have to assume by now he has a podcast.
He has to have the party podcast.
The party cast with Andrew WK. And the intro is just him saying, party, party, party. It's time to party. Andrew WK podcast. Party, party, party.
.com.
Now, that'd be great. That's like the Andrew WK, like, NPR show.
Yeah, that'd be great. It's just like, and coming up next, we have Andrew WK with party, party, party.
As always, if you would like a party, 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 you gotta have a party, it's time to party, we all want to party, tote bag, then you can support us at NPR. But anyway, speaking of, get on the Patreon, support us there, you get your bonus content, it's super fun. Just so you know, if you're recommending games these days, don't be surprised if it takes us a while. Our list is at like 90 games.
So many games. I didn't even know there were this many games. Why? Why do people keep putting out these games?
It's amazing. I mean, I'm not complaining. And by all means, if you have stuff to send us, you send us that stuff. Just get in contact with me. I'll get you an address you can send that stuff to. We will grow our horrible library of horrors, and we will keep reviewing games. We're never going to stop.
This horrible black library of the worst possible games.
Yeah. So, as always, thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon. Until then, have a great week.